Green Party TD says dissent over the National Maternity Hospital is being shut down. Is it, or is it just time to move on? Westminster moves on the Northern Ireland Protocol. Are we on the brink of an EU-UK trade war with Ireland stuck in the middle? And with more Airbnbs than daft rentals in every county in the country, is it time to declare all of Ireland a rent pressure zone? With all of that and more on tonight's Late Debate. Philip Boucher-Hayes in for Katie this evening, which is something that hopefully the four people sitting in front of me have already figured out if you hadn't at home. And they are Lisa Chambers, Deputy Leader of Seanad Éireann and Fianna Fáil Spokesperson on European and Foreign Affairs. Excuse me. Good evening, Lisa. How are you? Kian O'Callaghan, Social Democrats TD for Dublin Bay North and Party Spokesperson on Housing. Kian, how are you? Rhéada Cronin, Sinn Féin TD for Kildare North. Good evening, Deputy. And Ciara Phelan, Political Correspondent for the Irish Mirror. We want to hear from all of you, so please do get in touch. You can text on 51551, email latedebate@rte.ie or tweet to @latedebate_RTE. So, look, after all of the talk, back and forth, and the legal interpretation of just two words, the National Maternity Hospital project at St Vincent's Hospital is to get the green light from government. The only difference between now and when it was first to go to Cabinet is that there are a few more words to explain what the two words, clinically appropriate, means. All of which left Social Democrat co-leader Roisin Shorthall wondering what had been the point of the last 2 weeks.
We really have to ask, what was the point of the last 2 weeks? You said that you wanted the documents to be scrutinised and you indicated that you were open to change. But it's quite clear now that that was actually a charade. What's the message then to the women of Ireland? Is it calm down? You don't need legal guarantees. The word of the Cabinet will suffice. You can forgive the women of Ireland, Taoiseach, if they're not reassured.
You suggested that we feel that the women of Ireland don't need guarantees. That's not fair. We've addressed those issues through legal guarantees. And the advice to government is that those legal guarantees are watertight. Watertight is the advice,
Deputy,
the legal advice that the government received this morning.
Watertight, you heard the man. The sidebar political drama here is what this debate is doing to the Green Party. Dublin Central TD and self-described thorn in the side of her own party leadership, Nasa Hourican, said today that dissent had been quashed. Was this enough, though, to convince her that she should finally part ways with the party? Was the very direct question put to her by Drive Time's Cormac O'Hara.
Well, I suppose it depends on how you consider the party versus the people. And I think that I am voting in line or expressing political views that are in line with our party's policy. And in line also with the programme for government, may I say, which states that we can go ahead with this project if the government's issues are comprehensively addressed, which I believe they have not been.
So the rest of the Green Party is not?
I believe I am representing a very true version of why people voted on for me as a Green Party representative.
So I'm pretty sure, well, sure as I can be anyway, that that is her saying, no, I won't leave the party. But then things changed. Matters would have rested there were it not for the intervention of Tipperary Independent TD Matty McGrath. And Ciara Phelan, this is where I'm going to let you pick up the threads of this and explain to us. Having avoided a vote and the embarrassing prospect of watching government backbenchers wrestle their consciences through the Neil lobby, now there is the prospect of that actually happening.
Yeah, we're not sure yet if there definitely will be a vote tomorrow night. Like you said, a rural independent TD, Matty McGrath, stood up and called for the vote. But there's six rural independent TDs and they'll need another additional four to support that vote going forward for it to go ahead tomorrow night. But the situation is that the government were bounced into this and I don't know what Matty McGrath's agenda was in calling the vote, but essentially the government had announced earlier on that they weren't going to put down a counter motion or oppose Sinn Féin's motion.
And because this is an opposition motion, it wouldn't matter at the end of the day.
Yeah, and obviously Cabinet signed off on the deal today, but they were avoiding doing the counter motion to save themselves, I suppose, the embarrassment of voting tomorrow night. So it's still up in the air a little bit whether there's going to be a vote tomorrow night or not.
Lisa Chambers, is that what you understand is the process now? I mean, was Matty McGrath putting himself in the position effectively of the government in proposing a counter motion and forcing everybody through one or other lobby?
You know, like Matthew McGrath would have his own agenda, but essentially there was a Sinn Féin motion on the National Maternity Hospital. The government didn't propose a counter motion or oppose it. So there was no vote to be called. So Matthew McGrath then stood up and said that he disagreed with the Sinn Féin motion and he demanded a vote. I don't think he agrees or disagrees. I think he wants to just get some headlines, which is usually his MO. Bearing in mind that this is the man that was against repeal of the Eighth Amendment, had particular views on gay marriage. So I don't think he has, you know, particularly strong views on whether or not there's going to be restrictions on reproductive services at the National Maternity Hospital. Maybe I'm wrong.
Okay, but he's created a sticky situation, hasn't he?
He's created a scene for himself and he's put himself, and even talking about it tonight is adding fuel to it, which isn't great either.
Oh, I'm sorry. Are we not allowed to talk about it? I haven't read that memo.
You can talk whatever you want. And my point is that he's obviously doing it to create attention for himself. And that is, my view is that his sole agenda here is to promote Matthew McGrath and it's not about the issue. So whether there'll be a vote tomorrow or not, 10 people need to stand in their places to call a vote. They only have 6 in that group. Can they get 4 more just to have the vote called? Potentially, yes. But we don't know.
Kieran O'Callaghan, I imagine that you're going to walk through the yes lobby if there is a vote on this tomorrow. But is there any point to it? Is the issue not over and put to bed at this stage?
I don't think the issue is over for a lot of people that still have concerns. There was a lot of things raised in the last 2 weeks that are still not answered. I think there was the opportunity in the last 2 weeks for the government to address some of those concerns, to maybe change the legal documents, but there's no changes whatsoever that have been brought in. Even the talk that there was that there might be a legal definition for clinically appropriate, that hasn't been put into the legal agreement.
Might that be because what the government is saying is the case is actually the case, that it is watertight?
I think if the government feel that it's watertight, then why don't they have their courage of their convictions to actually vote down the motion, which they don't agree with?
Because the Green Party could lose 2 TDs.
I think if they believe in their position and they believe in it strongly, they should actually have the courage and conviction to vote down the motion that they don't agree with. And I think that's quite cynical, actually, this business that the government won't, just because it suits them, won't vote down motions in the Dáil, but then just proceeds to ignore them. There's been 3 motions passed in the Dáil unanimously that have called for the National Maternity Hospital to be in full public control and full public ownership. And those 3 motions from the Dáil now are being ignored by government. Okay. So I think it does make a mockery, I think, of having these votes and having these discussions and having these debates if that's the way they're going to behave and if they won't engage fully with the concerns that are raised and actually make changes in the legal agreement.
Rita Cronin, Sinn Féin, what has actually been achieved with Sinn Féin's opposition to this now? We've had 9 years of wrangling over the National Maternity Hospital already. Have you done anything other than prolong that?
Well, I don't accept that. You know, the fact that the government weren't opposing our motion tonight and we're just going to let it go ahead, it really makes a mockery of the Dáil. It makes a mockery of democracy. The Dáil has, you know, 4 times tomorrow, 3 times thus far, voted that we want this public hospital built on public land. And that's what the people want. You know, they talk about Sláinte care and the need for a public health system, and yet they're going ahead with this. The chair, I was watching a few of the committees, the health committees, and the chair of the St Vincent's Healthcare Group spoke in the Oireachtas Committee, Health Committee, yesterday, and he said that the government had made no serious or meaningful discussions to push for full ownership. Now, today,
Can I go back to your first point, though, please? Is it what the public want? I mean, we were told that the culmination of this debate was going to be the protest on Saturday and how many people turned out to oppose the government's plans. Hundreds, not even a thousand.
That is, you know, really shows you how cynical the government are if they were waiting to see how many people would turn up.
Well, it wasn't just the government. It was the opposition as well. Everybody said this is going to be the signal, the best indication of where public opinion lies. And people stayed away in their droves.
Well, even today, you know, the emails have been pouring in. Women do not want this. We were told that we were going to be given 2 weeks to discuss this. The Minister for Health said that he was open to looking at changes, but he seems to have been overruled by the Taoiseach, who today said that he was hauling in the chair of St Vincent's Healthcare Group to correct the record. Now, this is the same group that gave a letter of comfort to many of the female. As the female TDs and ministers in the cabinet. What does that letter of comfort mean now if he's been hauled in by the government to backtrack on what he said?
I tell you what, let's not relitigate that one just yet. Let's go back over what the political fallout of the consequences of this all might be. Ciara, winners and losers?
It's hard to really narrow it down. I suppose that there's going to be losers for those campaigners and opposition TDs who pushed for the two issues in particular to get resolved, that people had raised concerns about the clinically appropriate phrase and also the ownership of the land. But I do think that Fianna Fáil and the government will be seeing this as a win, given that it's taken so many years to get the new National Maternity Hospital.
Well, really, well, let's examine that a little bit more. We can use Lisa Chambers as a foil on this. They've spent an enormous amount of political capital in Fianna Fáil to get this over the line, something that should have been a celebration for the women of Ireland, that they were going to get the facility that they finally deserved, has turned into a very protracted, sticky wrangle, hasn't it?
Well, yeah, I agree with you. And maybe perhaps Health Minister Stephen Donnelly might reflect on that, on the process and how he brought the memo to Cabinet in the first place. Maybe in hindsight, should there have been greater communication about the memo? Mm. Was it the right time? You know, some people brought up the fact that the burials bill was at, you know, in committee stage and it didn't look good. I don't know what the discussion was before Cabinet. I understand some Cabinet ministers had known about the memo on the Friday night before it went to Cabinet on the Tuesday.
Well, what also matters more right now is, Lisa Chambers, what are your feelings about Stephen Donnelly and the way that he handled this? Are you annoyed at the amount of political capital that was wasted?
I don't think anything's been wasted. Like, we've been 9 years talking about this. Stephen Donnelly is...
And it's still not done.
It's getting there and it will get done. Stephen Donnelly is the fourth health minister to try and get this over the line. The previous three Fine Gael health ministers didn't get it delivered. That's not a good thing. And it is a positive news story. No one individual and no one party speaks for the entirety of the women of Ireland. So if I hear that term again, you know, there's different viewpoints out there. Granted, plenty of women and men and others want to get this project delivered and support it in its current form. That includes more than 50 clinicians, midwives, obstetricians, gynaecologists, doctors working in the National Maternity Hospital and other hospitals, full square behind this project as it stands. So there's lots of people in support of this. And actually, I think the majority are in support of this. The emails have not been flying in opposition to this, I can tell you that. Yes, getting some, but we haven't been barraged with loads of emails. So to kind of put a few things on the record, one of the key things people were concerned about, I believe, was that there would somehow be a rollback on reproductive rights, that somehow, in particular, abortion...
Again,
services,
like I said, I stopped Rheda from relitigating all of that.
But
we,
I think
we've
the
heard
point,
all of that.
But I do want to make one point. If there's a concern around that, rolling back on reproductive rights isn't going to happen in the boardroom of any hospital. It'll happen in the Oireachtas if it happens at all. And yeah, that's something that could potentially happen down the line, because we can legislate now either way. More liberal, more conservative. It's happening in Poland, it's happening in the United States. But that battleground is in the Oireachtas, and it's in the general public discourse. It's not in the boardroom of one hospital. But I'm not dismissing the concerns that were there. Okay. And I think they have been adequately addressed. This is a 299-year lease. The legal safeguards that are there have been poured over,
right,
not just by the AG, but by the National Maternity Hospital lawyers and many others.
As we've heard
so
you
to
say,
but just
in,
to say
in
that
this
they
studio
weren't addressed
just a few days ago,
well, to
it
say
happens.
That they haven't been addressed isn't a fair and accurate assessment.
And
for
there
the
last is
2 weeks.
Disagreement. And there is disagreement among but, legal experts. And that's the reason why we
put two lawyers in a room. There's always
exactly,
going to be disagreement.
Exactly. That's the reason why we have.
Ian, let me bring you back in here. This must have looked to the Social Democrats a couple of weeks ago like a pretty easy one and a popular one to oppose, and that you might have been able to harness a little bit of that kind of repeal the eighth energy. That was the wrong calculation at the end of the day, wasn't it?
Well, I mean, I don't think there was any calculation made like this, like that. And this isn't something that we took a position on a couple of weeks ago. Roisin Shorthall has been leading on this for a considerable amount of time. I had raised issues around this in the Dáil shortly after I was elected 2 years ago. So this isn't something that's, you know, recent. This is something that has been going on for a number of years. This is fundamentally about, and it's not just relevant in health, it's also, we see this in education. This is about, in terms of public resources, can we build a public service and a public system that our public resources are in full control, full ownership, that we don't leak resources out of our public system. We've invested as a country a massive amount in healthcare, massive amount in education, and we actually aren't getting the kind of public services we should be getting, because a lot of our resources are leaking out of that system. And that's, for me, this is what this is fundamentally about. So this isn't, I don't look at this in a short term. the worry I have is that we still, as a country, this is still the way we are doing our business, and we don't have governments, and I'm not just saying this current one, generally we don't have governments protecting the public interest in the same way as they do in other countries.
All right, variation on the same question to you, please, Raida. It was an easy populist horse for Sinn Féin to back, wasn't it? Because it's going to take ultimately 300 years for you to be proven wrong on there not being any religious interference yet, isn't it?
I don't know that I'll be still around in 300 years, but we've had 100 years of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael conservatism in Ireland, and we're now going to be legally tied into another 300 years of it, and that's really not good enough.
But that's not an answer to my question because, you know, my point is that you will never be proven wrong in anybody's political lifetimes on this, so of course it was an easy horse for you to back.
It had nothing to do with being proven wrong or being proven right. It really hadn't. And it's not just about repeal. This is about a public health public land. This is public money that's going into this. At the moment, the figure of 1 billion is being bandied about. That's how much money is going into building this hospital on private land. And, you know, we're talking about Sláinte Care. And I was just up in the north there in the last few weeks canvassing. And no matter how bad their NHS is, they love their NHS up north, and, you know, in Britain as well. They love their NHS. Whereas in Ireland, you know, when we talk about the HSE, it leaves a bad taste in people's mouths. We need to reform our health service.
It was a very bad day.
Well, we have plans, and David Cullinan has plans, and you know, we have plans on how we're going to reform it. But this is a very bad start, you know, just after Sláinte Care, to be pumping 1 billion euros into a public hospital on private land. And, you know, it's not just about women. Okay. It's about men as well who are expecting a decent public health service.
Ciara, was that protest and the small numbers that turned up on Saturday the watershed moment in this?
I think that they were expecting a lot more people. Like, speaking privately to a cabinet minister on Saturday night in particular, said that they made the point that they thought that there would be a lot more people.
And did that change calculations for them?
I don't think so. I think from late last week on Friday, the Taoiseach did a doorstep in Kildare at a housing development, and his message before that protest on Saturday was that we were going ahead and there was no change being made to the phrase clinically appropriate.
And so what had the point of the last 2 weeks been then, to go full circle back to Roisin Shortall's question? Were we just going through the motions for the sake of it?
Possibly, but I do think that, you know, there were some minor changes. You know, the government announced today that for the first 5 years that the hospital is in operation, there will be an annual report. And I think that, you know, it was wise to give the pause and to what, you know, some people would say, we have clarity now. I think there was a lot of the misinformation was challenged, and that I think the issue was some outcry and frustration from certain campaigners and activists, which are rightly highlighting that the state and has had a bad relationship about women's reproductive rights, and you can understand why they'd feel that way, especially for women who may have been involved in any of the you know, the likes of the Magdalene Laundries and the mother and baby homes that we've only recently, we're still talking about, you know. Mm-hmm. So I completely understand that. But no, I think the government were hell-bent on getting this memo through, and I don't think the protests actually had not much to play in their decision.
51551 for the texts. Mike in Galway. To understand the Taoiseach, he said the National Maternity Hospital constitution is watertight. May I say they all said that the Titanic was also watertight. Well done, Mike. Get the hospital built. We need it, says Catherine. If the legal eagles say it's locked tight for 300 years, then just get on with it. Sure, the way things are going, there'll be no Catholic Church in 2322. I wasn't able to read that at first. 2322. And let's hope the build is finished by then, says Catherine. on Twitter at LateDebateRTE, on the protest, we mobilised hundreds. The next time it will be thousands. And regarding the National Maternity Hospital, the politicians deciding to go ahead today will also be long gone when problems raise their heads. At LateDebateRTE on Twitter, 51551 on the text. Recently, the Minister for Foreign Affairs said that it was becoming increasingly difficult to understand what the UK's actual position on the Northern Ireland Protocol was. A masterful piece of understatement, as it has turned out, as what was being spoken of in Westminster yesterday as mere insurance policy has again today become a full-on dismantling, as Foreign Secretary Liz Truss set out in the Commons today.
I would like to update the House on the Northern Ireland Protocol and to lay out the next steps. Our first priority is to uphold the Belfast Good Friday Agreement in all its dimensions. That agreement put in place a new arrangement for the governance of Northern Ireland and these islands composed of three interlocking strands. A power-sharing government at Stormont on the basis of consent and parity of esteem for all communities. Intensified north-south cooperation on the island of Ireland. And enhanced arrangements for east-west cooperation. So much of the progress that we have seen in Northern Ireland rests on this agreement. And for the agreement to continue to operate successfully, all three strands must function successfully. These are the arrangements, are the foundation on which the modern, thriving Northern Ireland is built. It commands the support of parties across this House. And we will continue to work with all communities in Northern Ireland to protect it.
So I suppose I should say, before we all go setting our heads on fire and running around the room screaming trade war, that all that that is an announcement about a decision to place a bill before the House of Commons. So we are either a long way from dismantling the protocol, or we're just around the corner from dismantling the protocol, depending on who it is that you're talking to. The people that Tony Connolly has been talking to this evening in Brussels were expressing dismay, verging on disbelief, apparently. So is it all too believable, or is that just what the UK would have us believe? Rita Cronin, what do you think? Do you believe them, or is this an elaborate game of chicken?
I don't know, but the Boris Johnson, the Prime Minister, is saying that he's going to be bringing forward legislation over the next few days to break international law. Like, the absolute absurdity of it. And whether or not it's to give cover to the DUP to go back into Stormont, I don't know. But, I listened to Liz Truss there earlier on today, and it's hard to know exactly what they're up against. Now,
Have you not got better intelligence in Sinn Féin on the thinking inside the British government than that?
Well, you know, we do know that, and I think Martina Anderson's put it very well when she said that the next agreement that Britain goes along with and abides with. Agreement that Britain has made with Ireland will be the first time that they actually agreed, that they actually go through with an agreement with Ireland. So the EU might be a bit more surprised than Sinn Féin is. It is absurd that they're talking about bringing forward legislation that is going to make it possible to break international law.
Cian, what do you believe is the case?
It's impossible to know for certain with Boris Johnson and his government. He certainly has form before of making these threats, saying he's going to do things and then not carrying it out. So I think that actually weakens his position somewhat. If this was the first time he'd done something like this, then people would naturally take it, might take it as an absolute that he is going to go through. He's completely unpredictable. How could any of us tell for certain whether he will or not? I think everyone is taking it very much seriously. One thing I don't think he's doing is I don't think it's anything to do with trying to give cover to DUP or anything. I don't think he could care less about DUP or actually. I think he's been reckless.
Well,
I think
he's been reckless. We're pretty sure he doesn't care about the DUP, but he does care about the European Research Group, who care about how the DUP are going to react on the issue of the legitimacy of the European Courts of Justice as the final arbiter in matters related to the single market. So, he is playing to a domestic constituency.
He absolutely is, yeah. And I think that's what this is about. He's trying to deflect from his own domestic weaknesses on a number of fronts. And he has been under quite a lot of pressure, and he's no better way for him to do that than pick a battle again with Europe. And I think that's what it's about. And it is playing to a domestic audience. I think he's been incredibly irresponsible in terms of the relationship between the Irish government and the UK government in terms of you know, the joint relationship they have in terms of helping to support the peace process in Northern Ireland. I think that's at its weakest level that it has been in probably 40 years. You don't have the level of cooperation there. The elections in the North, I think, were a real opportunity. It's the first time we see now three strong strands emerging in the North. It's a real opportunity for both governments to actually try and adjust to that, move to that. And then I think the call from the Alliance, for example, that you shouldn't have one of the traditional two strands being able to block and veto everything and adjusting to that.
And
that should be what he's doing if he's being responsible and trying to unblock that logjam. Rod, I don't think he's any interest in that.
As the Alliance pointed out yesterday, and I think it was quite remarkable that their conclusion at the end of the meeting was that he didn't understand how the D'Hondt mechanism worked or how it apportioned seats around the executive table. Had anybody else picked up on this, that Boris Johnson seemed to be completely ignorant of the manner in which the executive is and has been since 98 set up? No? Okay, that was...
Yeah, but it's not terribly surprising, is it? And I think it's that lack of interest. I don't think he has the interest in it.
Frankly, I was absolutely amazed. I thought that it was something that was very, very basic to anybody who had ever looked at any election there. Anyway, Lisa, within government circles in Fianna Fáil, what do you believe they're at?
Yeah, I mean, it's worrying, being frank about it, but we've been here before and they've kind of ratcheted up the pressure at different periods to try and, I suppose, get concessions on how the protocol is operating. I'm not sure we can ever really fully square the circle, though, because we have the DUP saying the protocol, it doesn't matter what way it looks or what shape it takes or how it's redrafted or amended, if there's a protocol in existence, they're not happy. And the EU have been very clear, we can find flexibilities, is the language they're using, but we're not removing it and we're not newly negotiating it. So how we get those two to meet, I don't know the answer to that. But there are extensive negotiations still ongoing with Mara Sefcovic and the UK government around what they term the practicalities of how the protocol works. So they're looking at day-to-day goods coming in, how can they reduce checks? 80% of checks have already been removed. So this legislation, Liz Truss is talking about green lanes and red lanes and goods just for Northern Ireland in the red lane and goods that might go to the EU in the green lane. That's already happening. We're already checking certain goods anyways. So
I was going to say, and for exactly that reason, there's nothing particularly novel or scary in that.
Yeah.
All the more reason not to set our heads on fire running around the room screaming trade war.
Well, we shouldn't do that anyways. But yes, I would agree with you. And perhaps there is an element here of trying to find some way to give the DUP something to kind of latch on to, so they can say they've met, that they've got a concession or they've won on something. I'm not sure that we'll ever find something that will satisfy them to the extent that they want to be satisfied. But if we get to a stage where 6 months down the line there's still no executive in place, that's problematic. And that is destabilising for the Good Friday Agreement.
What do you all identify as the key issue for the DUP? Am I right that it might be the jurisdiction of the European Courts of Justice, or do you think that there is something else, or is their thirst unquenchable?
I think maybe the latter, actually, under the current leadership and the current policy there. Their big gripe, as I see it, is that Northern Ireland is being treated differently to the rest of the UK. So Great Britain has been treated differently to Northern Ireland. And they're right, it is. Because it's got a bespoke solution, because it's in a different, island.
No, exactly. They have a preferential situation that actually is very good for the North, and they've been doing better in the recovery since COVID than other regions and other parts of the UK. But they're not taking advantage of.
But actually, the
DUP aren't seeing the.
But there was a
potential
massive
to take the advantage.
There was
out
a
of
massive
that.
Increase not, in trade north and south on the island.
Yeah.
And the DUP said that was a bad thing. So this isn't, they're not liking this.
This is economically really, really good for the North, and it's a huge opportunity. And the DUP should, of course, be showing leadership.
I completely understand that.
If
I
was
a Northern Unionist, in fact, really, you could deal with this. If I was a Northern Unionist and I saw increased dealings economically between North and South, I would look upon that as the underpinning of a united Ireland economically, which will only and can only ultimately lead to it happening politically. So, of course, it'd be something that you'd resist.
Well, that's not the case, because businesses in the north of Ireland are absolutely, they have the best of both worlds at the moment. They have the European market, they have the the market here in the 26 counties, and they have the market in Britain. So, you know, businesses in the north are absolutely delighted with the protocol, because what businesses want is certainty. Businesses can work around things.
But it's not the business leaders that we're trying to figure out, it's the DUP.
But people who are running businesses aren't thinking with a unionist cap or a Republican cap. You know, they're thinking about their business.
Yeah, and I know, but they're also not collapsing the Stormont executive at the moment. It's the DUP that we're trying to figure out here.
Interestingly enough, if the Northern Ireland Protocol was actually allowed to bed in properly and was supported, it could be a barrier to United Ireland, because if you've got the best of both worlds, are you going to vote to leave one market? So if the DUP were actually being clever about it, they would have backed Theresa May's deal, because it was a better deal and they wouldn't be in the problem that they're having now. But actually, the protocol means that Northern Ireland has this bespoke, special solution where they've got clear access to two markets. I'd want to hold on to that if I were a business.
I think the DUP have driven up a cul-de-sac, and they actually don't know what they're doing at the moment, because they didn't. They backed Brexit, and yet the majority of people in the north didn't back Brexit. And the DUP are kind of just finding themselves now between a rock and a hard place, and they really don't know what they're doing, because they're flaying about. Okay. Like it makes no sense.
The DUP are looking over their shoulder at the traditional unionist voice, and they're afraid of shedding votes there. And what they should be more concerned about, they're losing voters, younger voters, to the likes of the Alliance and other parties in the middle ground. And that, if they don't reimagine their position in unionism, they're going to increasingly have a more older conservative vote. And that doesn't have, I don't think that is going to have a particularly strong future for them. And they need to be thinking, what's actually happening here? Where are younger voters going?
Okay. Not that I distrust Lisa Chambers' misread on what's happening inside of government, but Ciara Phelan, what have you heard inside of government and their reaction to today's announcement by Liz Truss?
Yeah, like echoing there what the three politicians have said, they are, you know, they're not totally surprised by this. We have heard it before, but I think the fact that Liz Truss has said that the domestic legislation would come in the coming weeks, that's kind of made the hair on the back of a few people's necks stand up.
You believe her.
Yeah, but I think there's probably a lot more conversation and hype about it now, given that the executive is not sitting, and that there may be pressure from the DUP to continue on Boris Johnson over this. And I suppose you saw Foreign Affairs Minister Simon Coveney saying today that what has happened only further damages trust. And like Keane said, that the relationship there between the UK and Ireland is probably at the worst it has been in 40 years.
And are they all convinced as well that this is really just about the leadership of the Tory party?
No, I think the concession I was getting from people is that from the DUP side as well about the protocol, it's about unionism as well and identity, and trying to protect that.
But within the trial, I meant everything that we are seeing in Westminster. Is that what you're saying is about protecting unionism, or is that about who gets to walk in the doors of number 10 after the next general election?
No, I'm not sure, to be honest, but I think what Liz Truss was saying and what was being mooted from Westminster was that they wanted to protect peace in Northern Ireland. And what was being mooted last week, they used the example of the hoax bomb situation at the event with Simon Coveney. So it's unsure what exactly their agenda is. But like I said, Foreign Affairs Minister Simon Coveney today saying that it only further damages trust. And like Raida mentioned, it's the businesses in Northern Ireland that are impacted by this. For years, they didn't know how Brexit was going to impact them. Then we had COVID. They're only coming out of COVID. They've been hit financially by this, and also with the cost of living crisis, and now the possibility of a change to the protocol.
We might not know what they're at, but you do have to take your hat off to them, don't you, Raida, for being the people who have managed to position themselves, to their domestic audience anyway, as the true guarantors of the Good Friday Agreement.
That was rich, wasn't it? That did make me laugh that they were against the protocol because it went against the Good Friday Agreement. You know,
I'd say there's some spin doctor somewhere his gin and tonics bought for him.
There certainly is. We had a general election there in the north 10 or 11 days ago. The people spoke. They've returned their MLAs, who all of them want to get back to work. You know, the cost of living is an issue as well in the north, and there's £300 million in a in a safe, waiting to be distributed to ease the cost of living crisis.
It's bad news for you and Sinn Féin, isn't it? And for the Sinn Féin project, if you don't get a functioning executive up and running in the north pretty quickly, because people down the south will just say, it's just not working, is it?
Well, I was out last night in Selbridge, knocking doors and talking to people, and I couldn't believe the enthusiasm from people in Selbridge around the elections in the north. The day of the election, people were popping into my constituency office saying, well done, you're doing great. I couldn't believe the enthusiasm.
Really, Rick?
Absolutely.
Unbidden, yes. Unprompted by anything. The people of Kildare North.
That people were coming into my constituency office in Naas, and last night in Selbridge, people were congratulating us.
I wish I'd been a fly on the wall for that conversation.
You're very welcome to join me any night.
Sorry for interrupting you, Rhéda. On Wicklow Street on what day it was on Saturday, I actually experienced a homeless man get up off the ground who spotted Michelle O'Neill walking down the street and ran up after her. And I heard the conversation and what he said to her.
Oh, go on, tell us. Intruding on privacy here, are we? Oh, no, it happened on the street. Go on.
He congratulated her for her success, and that he said that he wished something similar would happen here soon. And I've never experienced that. I have noticed abuse being hurled at Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil TDs while down the street. So that was an eye-opener for me. It was very significant.
Honestly, I couldn't believe it either. People actually coming into the constituency office to congratulate us. People last night.
Cian, when was the last time somebody ran up to you and congratulated you in the street?
It happens all the time. I think there's no question.
It was a cheeky question. You have every right to tell me to F off.
Yeah, people want change. There's no question about that. I don't think, I really hope the Assembly is up and running as quickly as possible. I don't think if blame is apportioned, I think it's going to rest solely and squarely on the shoulders of the DUP. And I think that's very, very clear there. Everybody else is looking to work.
There's unanimity around this table, it would seem, for a change. Let me take that opportunity then to take a break.
The Late Debate on RTE Radio 1.
We have a new inkblot test in Irish politics. Croí Cónaithe cities. What it is depends on who is doing the looking. Is it a handout to developers? Is it a necessary market intervention? Is it the right way to unlock supply, push down demand, reduce prices? Is it the wrong way to help people priced out of the property market? Ciara Phelan, first off, what actually is it?
Yeah, so this is a new scheme which aims to bridge the viability gap between the cost of building apartments and the market sale price. So the scheme is essentially to help subsidise the costs of building apartments and it's in response to
the government. The viability gap being something that's arisen because of the rising cost of materials.
Yeah, that's it. And the scheme, as the government say, they expect to deliver 5,000 apartments by 2026. But it's been met with significant opposition.
Why would that have happened?
Well, there was actually reports in the Sunday Business Post at the weekend that, you know, a couple would have to be earning €100,000, an income of €100,000 to be able to afford some of the apartments that they would be costing up to €400,000. And essentially, the scheme does not bring down the price of the apartment. And that's completely unaffordable for the majority of people in Ireland.
Is there, Lisa Chambers, a bit of a mismatch here between the price point and the house size of the houses that have been picked in this 5,000 units of development? That basically where you're looking for people of combined incomes of 100,000 for a two-bedroomed apartment, they tend to be at the stage of their lives where they're moving beyond two-bedroomed apartments, don't they? That you're not identifying the correct cohort, basically, with the price point that these houses are going to come on the market at.
Yeah, I take your point on that, that maybe you're at a different stage in life when you're looking to get out of a two-bed apartment, but maybe not. I mean, it depends. I mean, you know, things are shifting and people want different house choices. This is just one initiative of many. You know, we're putting in 20 billion up until 2026, 4 billion a year to housing. The Croí Cónaithe has one initiative. It's to try and address the issue where currently doesn't actually make money to build an apartment to sell it at the market rate. So you have a lot of apartments being built to rent but not built to buy. So it's trying to cater for that section of the market and give people a bit more choice. But you've got affordable housing schemes, you've got cost rental schemes.
Yeah, okay, let's not go on to
but
them.
The point is, if you view it in isolation.
I'm not going to allow everybody else to view it in isolation, but let's deal with it. Let's just sort of drill down into it for a second. Does it not stick in your craw a little bit that you're putting 25,000 up to 144,000 into each dwelling and it's not going to do anything to reduce the market price? It's still going to be the market value. That money's just going to developers.
Well, market price is dictated by supply. Not that I'm an economist, but the more supply we have, the more we can actually address price. But we obviously have a gap in the market in that there isn't an offering for people that want to purchase apartments. There isn't enough of them. So to me, anything that increases supply is a good thing. Let's give it a chance. But often, as with every housing initiative, there's always going to be a certain cohort that will find holes to pick in it or won't be happy with it. It hasn't even started yet.
You're giving side eye to Rita Cronin there.
So let's just
go straight to her. You increase supply, Rita, you bring down prices. It's that simple.
It's that simple, isn't it? Yes, the government is talking about here, they're talking about underwriting private risk with public money. They're talking about putting in 450 million euros into this scheme. And to put the word Cree into it at all is absolutely perverse. Because I'll tell you, it's not Cree Cunnaha, it's Cree Briste is the people who are coming to
Were you working on that one all day, were you?
Spin doctors are working
Cree,
there.
When I was Cree Cunnaha, I said, how do they? Who thought about putting the word Cree into this scheme? You know, they're using public money into this scheme to actually cover people. It's not going to end up with reduced prices for people.
I wonder, are you miscalculating something here, though, Rita? Because you're targeting the developers, and you know we all have long enough memories to remember back to 2008, 2012. But the people, the builders who are in trouble here, who signed contract 2 years to complete at X price and now find because of rising material costs that they just can't do that, an awful lot of them are small builders. They're in your natural constituency.
Well, a lot of them aren't small builders, actually. A lot of these builders that are building are
a lot of the people who are in trouble. There are a lot of people who are in trouble.
And I would love to see a scheme where the government would come around to supporting small builders. I think Orla Hegarty was talking about the Dunsink model, where the small builders could get support from the government to start building houses. But this is about supporting the big developers' apartments who've been given planning permission to build these apartments and are now saying that they can't afford to build them. It's not going to end up with reduced costs to people who are just being priced out of the market, people who are hoping to put a roof over their heads. So I think it's a bit of a harebrained scheme.
Kieran O'Callaghan, you're opposing it. Why?
Number of reasons, but I mean, one of them is that this is going to create upward pressure in terms of prices. So when developers get granted these subsidies, a lot of them are going to flip on their sites at inflated prices. It's going to push up land prices. We need measures actually from government that will create downward pressure on prices.
Sorry, so you're telling me there's no guarantee on who they're sold to? That I thought the whole point of the scheme was that it was owner-occupier.
It's owner-occupier, but the developer, once they get this subsidy, once they get that approved, they can then sell on the site with the planning permission and with the subsidies. So if I own a site at the moment and it's worth €100,000 and I then have €500,000 in government subsidies attached to that site, I'm not going to sell the site for €100,000. I'm going to inflate the price significantly. And that's one of the key problems with this. There's been no economic evaluation of this, no independent analysis, no regulatory assessment. I'm not aware of any other country in the world that has any sorts of measures like this in place. We seem to be the only country in the world that actually bails out developers when prices collapse and then bails out developers when prices are sky high.
Is the Chamber, is there no mechanism to deal with what he's talking about?
Well, look, it's very easy to throw around terms like bailing out developers. I mean, we have a Minister for Housing that's actually trying to get...
No, answer his point.
I am. Somebody could answer the point across the table. We're looking to put 5,000 extra homes in the market in the next 4 years through this scheme. It's only one initiative, but it's one of many. That's a good thing. But yet here we are. We've got
that's
one person.
That's a good thing, but allowing people to flip them on at an excess profit isn't.
That's not the intention of the scheme. It's owner-occupiers, people that want to purchase their first homes. It's not for developers to sell on so they can be rented out. That's what we're trying to tackle, is that there isn't a market there for people that want to buy.
Okay, but you haven't explained to me how you allay the concerns that Cian O'Callaghan has raised here.
Well, my understanding is from the minister that there will be protections in place to make sure that these homes go to people that actually need them. But there is a gap in the market. There isn't
at what
there,
price? There because isn't, they're going to go at market value.
But
aren't they?
There is a limit to what people can pay. The market price is the market price. But the fact that there isn't actually affordable apartments for sale on the market because they're not worth building is a problem. And like, you've got somebody then criticising the name of the scheme. I mean, for God's sake, poking holes in
it. She made a pun and it was a good pun. Give her that much.
To be fair, like, I mean, anybody that's saying it's not a good thing to put 5,000 extra homes on the market in the next 4 years, we have a housing crisis, we're trying to deal with it as best we can.
You've said that three times, but I still haven't heard you allay Cian's concerns. Cian.
Can I just say, these won't be affordable, which is one of the problems. And if there is a significant intervention, it should be tied in with affordability. But a much better way of doing this is, at a fraction of the cost, a fraction of those sorts of 144,000 subsidies, you could, with that money, you could actually buy out these sites with the planning permission, the state could do that, and then they could use low-cost finance, which private developers can't get from the Housing Finance Agency, to pay for cost rental and affordable purchase apartments to be built. They'd be delivered at a much better price level, and then there would be a better use of public resources as well. So no one is suggesting just leave these sites sitting there and don't do anything with them. In fact, the minister at the last election talked about bringing in use it or lose it policies, so the developers couldn't sit in these planning permissions. They would lose their planning permissions after time. We've yet to see those.
Well, we'll deal with one point there. I mean, look, Lisa, the government is already €144,000 of the way to building these things in their entirety anyway. Why not just go the whole hog and do what Cian's suggesting?
Because it would take a lot longer. A lot longer. And there's no guarantee we'd have those homes delivered in the next 4 years.
Why would it take longer?
Because you're going to have to purchase the land first. Then you're going to have to go through procurement, tendering, all of that. So it's not, if you're suggesting the state would build on that land.
But the private developers have to go through tendering processes as well. They have to get in builders.
But it will be quicker. We have to use the private market as well. It can't be all state land.
We can be using private builders to do this.
But it sounds fantastic, but you have to have a mixture of private and social and state
and
as well.
This
you
is only one part of the mix. Cian, if we were to take the 450 million here and build on state land via housing agencies, how many houses do you think we'd get? Would it be more than 5,000?
Well, it depends what type you're building. Well,
and two-bedroom apartments seems to be where the most of them are going.
Which is one of the most expensive ways to deliver housing. So certainly if you're looking at, you know, look at Ocoolan in terms of them building three-bed semi-detached homes and they're coming in at 260,000 euro. So if you're looking in terms of housing affordability, you'd be much better off using the likes of Ocoolan and using not-for-profit delivery. There is a need in these sites to have, and they're in locations that are, you know, going to be higher density and higher and more homes in them. So it is going to need to be built out as apartments. But it's how you address that viability issue. And remember, this viability issue, baked into viability, according to developers, is a 15% minimum profit margin. So why should public money and subsidies be going in to guarantee that? Now, I've nothing against private developers getting their 15% private, you know, profit margin, but that should be because they're taking high risks, not because the state is coming along and bailing them out on this.
We know, and we have evidence to show, that these apartments are not getting built because they're not viable. We know that without this initiative, those 5,000 apartments, they wouldn't get built.
Okay.
So Rayda, any initiative that delivers that amount of homes is
better.
A good thing.
Well, that's the same. That's the, you know, a lot of builders are being faced with higher building costs at the moment. But underwriting private risk with public money, like, this is a harebrained scheme. I haven't looked at it. I don't know. I've only heard about it there a few days ago and I haven't really looked into it. But to me,
how can you call it a harebrained scheme if you haven't even looked into it? Come on
now.
That's absurd to be
underwriting private developers.
But if you haven't looked into it, you can't comment on a scheme that you haven't looked into. That's an absurd suggestion, quite frankly.
I've heard about it so far.
Heard about it from
where? I've looked into it in detail. I think it's harebrained, to be fair.
Well, you would say that because you're in the opposition. This is 5,000 homes in 4 years. It's a positive news story.
And
it's one initiative of many.
The alternative here, Rayda, is that these things might never get built at all. And that
should
there
that
are,
suit Sinn Féin down to the ground?
There are foundations laid
or
something.
You'd be delighted to suit Sinn Féin down to the ground.
You'd be delighted not
it
to be delivered.
Suit. It
sorry, but
suit
the houses are coming.
Into
so.
My, into oh, my right.
I went into the last
office.
Ad break with total agreement around the table.
You didn't actually. You included me in that, but I wasn't in that.
Well, you were
I was silent.
You were passive, shall we say. I need to take another break, but we're coming back to a related theme just after this.
The Late Debate on RTE Radio 1.
News from Times Ireland today, that are yesterday indeed, that in every single county in the country, there are now more Airbnbs being advertised than there are long-term rentals advertised on Daft. 2,000 Airbnbs in Kerry, only 31 rentals on Daft. 1,700 Airbnbs in Donegal, only 23 rentals on Daft. Ah, but those are tourist destinations, I hear you say. Well, let's look at Meath. 203 Airbnbs there, only 13 rentals. Carlow, 103 Airbnbs, 14 Daft rentals, and so on and so on and so on. Raida Cronin, powerful argument there for declaring the whole country a rental pressure zone, no?
Well, there is, yeah, and we have 19 rentals in North Kildare. Three of them in Maynooth, where I live, which is a university town, and there's usually would be 40 or 50 rentals in Maynooth, and we've three at the moment. It's absolutely, like, it's so difficult to have people. You know, it used to be that you'd be looking for HAP and you'd be worried about getting, you know, trying to get your HAP so that you could apply for a rental, and some people having difficulty. It's near impossible to get somewhere to rent at the moment now in North Kildare. 19 houses. I'm not sure how many Airbnbs, but I know that Eoghan Éireann has brought forward a bill into the Dáil today around Airbnbs to make sure that there would be that, you know, they shouldn't be advertising, Airbnb shouldn't be advertising houses that are not compliant with planning permission.
Well, I'll tell you, it's 128
it's a
in Kildare.
Indictment, really, when we...
128 Airbnbs in Kildare and 24 on Daft. And I thought one of the really interesting figures here was Kilkenny, where there was, as you would imagine, hundreds of Airbnbs on the market, up to 900, and only 11 being investigated, Cian, by the planning department, the enforcement section of the planning department for possible non-compliance with the regulations. We created this rule and then we didn't give either the courts or the councils the wherewithal to enforce it, did we really?
Yeah, the local authorities don't have the resources to go around enforcing and investigating all these. What is absolutely needed, and it's been talked about for years, the last government said they were going to do it, this government has said they're going to do it, but it hasn't been done, is that there would be legislation that would ensure that the onus is on the platforms that advertise, that you cannot advertise a short-term rental unless the person who's offering that submits, you know, planning compliance or proof of planning permission, because there's a tiny number of planning permissions in the country for conversions from rental properties into short-term lets. They simply don't exist in most cases.
So, I mean, it might well be that the other 889 rentals in Kilkenny are all compliant, but it's highly unlikely,
because there hasn't been those sorts of planning permissions going through the system. So this hasn't been enforced. And the way to do it is to actually put the obligation on the platforms that advertise them. They should not be able to advertise unless there's proof of planning submitted with the advertisement. And that's the way to cut that out. And that would make a big difference.
RPZ's, Lisa Chambers, sounded like a great idea, didn't they? But you didn't give them the tools to do the job done properly.
Like, rent pressure zones are a good idea and they have worked where they're in place. I mean, the Airbnb situation, there's no doubt there's a problem there that needs to be fixed. I don't think the solution is actually mandating the likes of Airbnb, the website, to stop listing things. Actually, the local authorities just have to do their jobs. And if they can't do it with the resources they have, they need to be resourced to do it. So we're in agreement on that front, I think, that, you know, whole homes that could be rented out to a family or to
an individual. It's just such a pity you're not in government and you can't do anything
The rules are there. The planning laws are there and the local authority should be enforcing it. And if they're not, first of all, we'll engage and see, well, why aren't they doing it? Is it a resourcing issue or did they just not bother to do it? I mean, it's not that onerous of a job to actually look at the listings and then go and check out those houses at a different period. It's not a huge job of work. So it can be done. The laws are already there. They just need to be enforced.
Everybody spare a thought for Ciara Phelan in this room, please. You're a renter, aren't you?
Yeah, for my sins, yeah.
How are you doing? Are you making rent?
My landlord's making a bomb off me, I'll tell you that. Right. Yeah, look, it's very depressing. I think the conversation we've had over the last couple of days, and you saw, even it's not just young people in my generation, you saw that couple, married couple with kids on Clareburn last night, facing into trying to find somewhere else to live. It's just, it's deplorable. And like I said, I don't know if the government realise how bad the situation is for people.
I don't think they do, because, you know, local authorities in Kildare County Council, I was looking up how many vacant homes we have, and in Kildare County Council we have 88 vacant homes needing major work, and we have 72 okay. needing minor work. Like, if those homes were if the local authorities were resourced to get those homes, that would loosen up a few.
It's no possibility. Resources.
All right. Cian O'Callaghan, Raida Cronin, Lisa Chambers and Ciara Phelan, thank you all very much. Sean Marram was our broadcast coordinator. Research was by Andrew Fleming, Liam Mullen on sound. Tonight's programme was produced by the series producer Penny Hart. Cathal Murray's on the way now with Late Date. First though, over to Michael Corcoran on the Sports Desk.